Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the annual program and business meeting of the California Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss. I am the CAAVL president, Frank Welty, and I'm delighted that you're here. And I think we're going to have a bunch more people coming in as the hour comes along. So let me give you a little bit of housekeeping before we get started. First off, we have a packed evening, so we're going to be moving pretty quickly. So that our speakers can get into their work, I'm going to hold off on introductions until the top of our business meeting at 8 p.m. So during our first hour, we have a couple of speakers from the Dale McIntosh Center, and they're going to be introduced shortly by Bob Acosta. And then during our second hour, we have a speaker from the Helen Keller National Center, and who will be introduced by Jeff Tom. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, we will do our business meeting. So it's going to be a packed 3 hours. All right. So with that, let's get started. Thanks everybody for coming. And I will turn the floor over to Bob to introduce our guests for this hour.
Allies in Aging, the Dale McIntosh Center, Aging and Disability Resource Connection, and Older Individuals Who Are Blind Program. This is what we're going to be discussing tonight. Description: this session will provide an overview of services available through the Dale McIntosh Center for Older Adults with Disabilities. The presentation will highlight how DMC serves individuals in the aging community who are adjusting to low vision or blindness. Presenters: Socorro Arroyo-Merchain, and also, she's the program manager, Aging with Vision Loss Program, and for the Dale McIntosh Center. And I'm going to give its phone number because they serve Orange County and Los Angeles County. So they're very important to our lives. 714-621-3300. And then Larry, oh boy, Wenger, Executive Director, Dale McIntosh Center. And with that said, I want to turn the microphone over to Larry, who's a neat guy to work with, and it's been a pleasure. And Larry, the mic is yours. We will have questions near the end for the audience. Thank you.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. And first and foremost, I need to let you know that I chose this weekend to move, and I don't have internet service, and a certain cell phone provider does not have great service in my area either. I'm on one bar and occasionally two. So I've got my video off and I'm hoping that my audio is clear.
Very clear.
And I'll apologize if it gets funky. Opportunity to be here to talk with you. So I'll plan to talk for a little while, and then Socorro will pick it up, and then we'll be available for questions. So we'll just kind of, it's kind of the flow we'll go with. So just a little background on myself. I think I know a lot of you, but in case you don't know me, I've been the executive director at Dale McIntosh Center for a little over 2 years. It's almost 15 months now. I tell people I started a new job at a terrible time. I became executive director literally 2 weeks before everything shut down because of the pandemic. So needless to say, it's been quite an adventure. So I've been around nonprofit work and independent living centers for the better part of 25 years now. And saying that just makes me feel real old. But that's the case. And originally from Michigan, spent quite a bit of time in Arizona, and then here in California. The Dale McIntosh Center, just to give you a little bit of background about the organization before I dive into more specifics about the topic. Dale McIntosh Center, or DMC, is the Center for Independent Living that serves Orange County primarily. And one of our programs, the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, also serves Los Angeles County. That's actually the only program that we offer in Los Angeles County. There are, I believe, six independent living centers located within Los Angeles County that provide the other typical services offered by an independent living center. So But we happen to provide the OIB program in Los Angeles County. But everything else is Orange County. Dale McIntosh Center is named after one of our founders. Dale McIntosh was a young lady who worked along with some other folks to establish the center way back in the 70s. And she had a significant disability and unfortunately passed away just before the center opened. And so the decision was made at that time by the founders of the organization to name it after her. So that's the significance of the name. And until recently, we've had someone from the McIntosh family on our board, and still one of the family members participates on our finance committee. So they've been involved with the organization for quite some time. We've been around, as I said, since the late 70s for almost 44 years now, 45 now almost, actually, when I do the math. And the center has grown significantly. We presently have just over 40 employees, and mostly in Orange County, but a few in Los Angeles County. And our budget is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $4.7 million dollars each year. So we're really getting to be a pretty large organization. And so we offer a wide variety of programs. I won't talk all about those programs and services that we'd use the whole hour, but we'll try to get more specific to services to folks who are in the aging community. But suffice it to say, we have a number of programs that operate out of the center. We have two offices, one in Anaheim and one down in Laguna Hills, and it's a very small office, but we're primarily based in Anaheim. So lastly, I always like to touch on our staff. Almost 70% of the folks who work for the organization do identify as having a disability. That's one of the unique things about an independent living center that I'm sure many of you know. We're mandated in the regulations that we follow as an independent living center to be at least 51% folks with disabilities on our staff. And then again, on the board level, that same ratio, that's the floor. And we really work to exceed that. On our board, it's closer to 85%, and staff, it's close to 70%. And then I always like to share as well that approximately 75% of our staff identify as being from a race or ethnicity other than white. And that's significant to us because we want to make sure we reflect the community we serve and diversity and the intersection of race and disability. And all of these things are very important to the community. And so we really try to, when folks come into our organization, it's something that we're pretty proud of, that they're going to likely encounter someone that they can identify with. Based on experience and perhaps issues in their life and those types of things. So it's pretty significant to us. I think it's important to share that over 60% of the individuals that DMC serves overall each year are over the age of 60. So we run those numbers periodically through the year. And it's about 62% of the individuals we serve are over the age of 60. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, as we age and grow older, our health and physical well-being or physical abilities, if you will, do change, and we're impacted by different issues. And so, you know, that just proves out what we see in statistics nationally, that while disability is common across all age groups, race, ethnicity, economic status, gender, et cetera, that it does impact folks in the aging community more so. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm really appreciative of our approach at DMC and the approach that is happening across the state at a couple of independent living centers in partnership with their local AAA agency, or in some cases, Office on Aging affiliated with the county, as it is here in Orange County. I really am appreciative and excited about the approach that we have, that we're bringing together aging and disability. Typically in the past, the aging services have focused more on the aging part of that equation. But there's a recognition that is ever increasing that disability is part of that equation. Even though in a lot of cases, seniors and folks in the aging population, they may think of that as just getting old, right? but in reality, what they're dealing with, be it mobility issues, visual issues, hearing, a variety of other things, are in fact disabilities. And, you know, whether they recognize it as that or not, we want to make sure they have access to the right services and supports to help them sustain independence. So when we work with folks in this aging and disability community, that's our goal, is to help folks maintain whatever level of independence that they strive to maintain or want to maintain. So I'll talk in a few minutes about some of those services, but that's our goal overall. So across the state, the California Department on Aging, thanks to legislation that passed back in 2018, established this ADRC, or Aging and Disability Resource Connection. Sometimes you might hear it called Aging and Disability Resource Center, or centers. These systems, thanks to that legislation, moved forward a pretty significant amount of funding to these ADRCs across the state. So for several years prior to that, I believe it's six communities or six counties across the state, and I don't know all of them, I apologize, there was work being done to establish and strengthen these ADRCs. And I'll give you more definition of that concept in a minute. And so that legislation really codified that an ADRC is a partnership between, again, the AAA or Office on Aging and the Independent Living Center in the community, recognizing that need to address both aging and disability issues, and recognizing that while there are a number of organizations that bring expertise, if you will, and to serving folks with disabilities, that independent living centers are commonly also bringing that lived experience as folks with disabilities. And that's certainly the case at DMC. So funding was put forward and provided some funding for these six ADRCs to get rolling. Those are the term they use for those are designated, or you might think of them as fully functioning and established ADRCs. And then there have been several that were what we call emerging or developing. And that number of established or designated ADRCs has grown this year. Can you hear me?
Yes. Well, we lost about a minute or two.
We lost about a minute.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It helps. Can't be helped.
I did warn you. I'm so sorry. I'm literally standing at an open window trying to make this work. So let me try to backtrack. And again, I was kind of describing what an ADRC is. The ADRC is, we throw around this term called an door system. And what that's supposed to mean and should mean for an individual looking for services is that I can call any number of organizations within my county who are part of the ADRC network and access services, and or get a warm handoff, not just a phone number, but literally a warm handoff to the most appropriate service provider that's part of the network. So that's our approach in Orange County, and that is to be the approach wherever you're at for the ADRC. So in Orange County, and you may see this in other places, we really push the Office on Aging as the connection point, the preferred connection point. That's, you know, you kind of have to settle on a number to publicize and push out there to the community, and that's what we do. So there are four core services of an ADRC. So there's information and referral, or what we call enhanced information and referral, and that's I call, maybe you're not the right place, and you give a warm handoff to the right place. Options counseling is literally sitting with somebody and talking through their goals and their objectives and what challenges they're facing and helping them figure out what options and choices they have. Transition services is helping folks transition out of a nursing facility or restricted living facility. It could be assisted living facility and move back to community or with family, whatever that looks like. And then there's an advocacy component, assisting folks with issues and challenges they might be trying to work through. So the staff and how those services are implemented does vary from one ADRC to another. I think it's important to talk about that these services are to be available and accessible to anyone, no matter what their disability is, right? So while organizations may have some expertise in certain areas, the reality is that whether you're deaf and hard of hearing, low vision, or have a mobility-related disability, that you need to be able to access these services. I think for purposes, though, of blind and low vision community, there's some real need for the ADRC side of things to kind of work closely with the OIB side of things. OIB, as you know, and Socorro will talk more about our program, and I don't want to steal her thunder, but that funding has been static for years. And doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And so the capacity to expand or enhance services through that program until such time that the feds increase the level of funding.
Larry Wager has left the meeting.
Oh, dear.
Larry Wager has joined the meeting.
Okay.
To make sure that... the services as the ADRCs grow and expand across the state, that those services that are being offered are inclusive of and supportive of blind and low vision folks in the aging community. I can tell you that along with the typical challenges, if there are typical challenges that a person who's losing their vision or has lost their vision with older experiences, they experience many of those things on top of the other challenges and experiences that folks in the broader aging population might experience. So to give you an example, several months ago, we had a situation trying to move out of a nursing home. I'm sorry, the ADRC program was dealing with that, and the person had low vision. We were able to pull in the OIB program for that expertise on vision loss and how to support specific issues while our ADRC staff worked the other side of the equation, helping them get those general services in place that someone might need when they're transitioning out of a nursing home, finding housing, furnishings, help with deposits, et cetera. So I think it's important to see the connection there. See, there's a lot of opportunity for an ADRC services that an ADRC offers to back and support the OIB program, and likewise the opposite way. So I don't want to hog all of the time. I'm going to stop talking for a little bit here, and I'll throw it over to Socorro, and I think we'll plan to take questions at the end.
I am here. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Larry. Hello, everyone. Hello, Allies in Aging. Really quick, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Socorro Arroyo Merchain, and I am part of the Dale McIntosh Center leadership team. I have been with Dale McIntosh, or also we refer to it as DMT, since 2000. I joined the team as an independent living skills instructor, and then had just a wonderful opportunity to learn and expand my toolkit, my skill set, and just learn about independent living. And it has become just an amazing part of my life. And it's given me so many opportunities. Became the program manager of what we're here to talk about to you and what I get to share with you today. As Larry mentioned, we refer to the program as our Aging with Vision Loss program, or you may also know it as OIB, older individuals who are blind, or you may also have heard it referred to as Title VII, Chapter 2. So those are all names, you know, federal technical names. Seven, Chapter 2, that's where the name comes from. DOR may refer to it as OIB, but at the Dale McIntosh Center, it's our Aging with Vision Loss program, and that's how we promote it to our community. So who do we serve? I'm really glad that we get this opportunity to share with you today about the program. The program is available to individual who lives either in Los Angeles or Orange County. Individuals 55 years of age or older, and there's no exception to that, to the age criteria rule. It's part of the regulations. So often we'll get called individuals who are 54 and they're like, well, can we just go ahead? I'm going to be 55 and in a week or two. And it's like, how about we do this? Let's schedule your appointment for like the day of your birthday or the day after. And then we could do that. So there really is no wiggle room, unfortunately, with the age, criteria. And then the third eligibility, so you must live in Los Angeles or Orange County, you must be 55 years of age or older. And then the third is, as long as the person believes that their visual impairment, their vision loss, is impacting their activities of daily living, a person qualifies for services through the program. I want to back up a little bit and share with you, kind of give you a little bit of background information so that you know a little bit about our history. The Dale McIntosh Center has this funding stream since the inception. So since Title VII Chapter 2 funds were allocated through the Rehab Act, they go and are awarded to each state through RSA, the Rehabilitation Services Administration, and send them over to each state. And in California, it's the California Department of Rehabilitation that administers the funding. And so you have to qualify. I mean, you have to apply, sorry. And I let me apologize for any background noise you may be hearing. And so organizations, nonprofits have to apply for the funds. And so we're really proud. We've worked really hard to really grow the program to where we are today. But we have applied for these funds since the inception of the funding stream, so 1996, and have been able to sustain the and improve it year after year up until now. And we continue to work on it every funding cycle and apply. So our team is made up of we have 9 staff members. We have seven instructors. And of those seven instructors, we have two that provide services in Orange County and five in Angeles County. And so we also have an intake coordinator and myself. And so as part of the team, we provide services to individuals. There is an intake process as well. There's information that must be gathered, that there's a reporting criteria to Department of Rehab. So there is a bit of an intake process that place that starts over the phone with an individual. And at this point in time, we are providing services in a hybrid situation. So services begin over the phone, and then an individual has the option of moving forward with services over the phone, remotely, through Zoom, FaceTime, a combination of different approaches, or in person, depending on, you know, there are protocols that we have in place because of COVID. So it really depends on the person and where they're at. If they've received their vaccine and their booster, we're able to move forward with services in person. So you may be wondering, well, what kind of services? So services vary. There are 12 different types of services that are OIB related services. Technology, so the provision of assistive technology devices and training. So that could be something as basic as providing someone a talking clock, talking scales, just a wide range of devices, from low or mid-range devices to, you know, at times we can also provide more of your high-end devices. It's really on a case-by-case need. There's also communication skills training. So where is the person, what are they struggling with in regards to their activities of daily living? And so the wonderful thing about services through Dale McIntosh, as Larry mentioned, our approach is that of the independent living philosophy. And so that consumer-directed model, the consumer, the individual who is services, is and as instructors and as staff members of Dale McIntosh, we partner with the individual to provide services. So often we have individuals who come to us for services and are really clear on, like, okay, this is what I need from you. This is what I'm looking for. And so that's great. And then other times there may be someone who's like, I don't know what I need. I'm not sure what's available. And so in those situations, we have a very extensive independent living skills questionnaire that we're able to complete the individual, and that helps by areas of need with that person, so that we can move forward and creating a plan that's to their liking. And we can also identify helpful tools, so devices that will reach a specific level of independence. And so that's how we're able to provide service through our Aging with Vision Loss program. Focusing on always, the three eligibility: a person must be 5 and older, live in either Los Angeles or Orange County, and then as long as their vision loss is impacting their activities of daily living. And that looks different for everyone. And then focusing on the and that number of appointments that a person receives. We can work with someone who, you know, who may be good to go after two appointments, and then maybe working with an individual who we've been working with for 6 months or longer. And so that's another wonderful beauty, you know, another good thing about the program is that there's no set time or limit on our services. The other aspect is we may provide services and close an individual's file. And then if that person needs services once again in a year or two, they can always reconnect with us. And we're more than happy to just, you know, in our terms, we just say reopen their file or reactivate their file, and they're eligible for additional services, whether it's more training, different technology they may need, but a person is eligible to come back and receive additional services. The other detail I'll point out is that a person can also receive services through the Dale McIntosh Center, through the Aging with Vision Loss Program, and through Department of Rehab, for example, or through the Braille Institute. It's not just one or the other. We work collaboratively with many of our, with all of our partners. So I often get asked that question, what if I'm already getting services from the Braille Institute or, you know, Department of Rehab? It's okay, but let's make sure we are communicating so that we're not replicating services. So that's a little bit of our Aging with Vision program. I would love to, if it's okay, if we're good with time, where we can open it up for questions.
All right. And Larry, as a host, do you want to go over the hand raising and such, please? Well, anyway, if you have a question, you know, I'm not going to go over all of them. I think it was gone over earlier. Alt-Y, certainly on the computer, raises your hand and we'll recognize you.
I'm on the phone. Can I ask a question?
Of course. Who's this?
This is Alice Hackney from the
Alice, East go Island. Ahead.
So, Carl, how long does it take from the time you do the intake until you meet with a client? And what's the average length of your training program for one person?
Hi there, Alice. Good to hear you.
Good to hear you, too.
So the average time there, our aim is to get back to an individual from the time they leave us a message within 5 business days. Our goal is to return that individual's call and get the phone intake completed so that we can get them on their way and working with an instructor. So it may take a little longer if we have like a wait list going on. So there are times where it can take longer than 5 days the process.
And once you start the training process, what's your average length? I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that your average was maybe 3 visits. Is that true, or do you go longer than that?
Oh, we go longer than 3 visits, definitely.
What's your average length?
I would say our average is 6.
6 visits?
Correct. 6 visits. I would say our average is 6 visits.
And that would include what type of training usually for six visits?
For six visits? Go ahead.
No, I'm just wondering, does that include taking computer training, that sort of thing? And I know you do bilingual.
So we do.
Because most of the people from that area are bilingual. And I know that our staff has always been bilingual, and I know you do too.
Thank you for bringing that up, Alice. Yes, you're right. We have staff that of our members that make up our Aging with Vision Loss program, there are four of us that are bilingual English Spanish speakers. And then there are also four of us that have lived experience. So four of us that are also individuals with varying degrees of visual impairments. And as far as computer training, not everyone, I would say, been a lot more of communication skills training, a lot of voiceover training, more than computer training. A lot of training on iPhones and tablets, TalkBack on your Android device. So, and that can go, you know, because you first we work on the fundamentals. And then once a person has those fundamentals under their belt, then it's like, okay, I want to learn how to download, and I want to learn how to use Seeing AI, and I want to learn how to use, and it can just go on from there. So definitely much more training on smart devices than on computers.
Okay,
and you do that in six.
Last question, Alice. We're going to see if others.
No,
go ahead. Ask
I was just. She said they do all this in six lessons. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is Larry still on here? I'm not clear.
I am. Yeah, I'm still here.
Larry, I must tell you that, and thank you, Socorro, for tackling. You stick around. You answer them very well. The questions, but we. Jeff Tom, who's our national president of the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, and a humble member named Robert Acosta, met with the AAA people in LA County. And I must say it was very disappointing because they met once with us and said, we know what you want. We don't want to meet again. Well, they don't know the California Council of the Blind. We are going to this. I'm taking it to my supervisor. They will meet with us. Okay, there's more than just Braille, or there's a lot of, there's 300,000 blind and low vision people in LA County. And I shudder, your staff's doing it the best it can, but five of them. My question is, your name came up, your agency. And we said, have you worked with Macintosh? We met him at some event. And I said, that doesn't count. Have you worked with them? Have you let them know what you're doing? You know, and can we work together? As Socorro said, if it's not rehab, it's the Braille Institute. AAA claims to have all these hubs. They're the hub for all these supervisory places. And I asked the question again, but I want to say, and with all the things they claim to do, they didn't even have a Braille brochure and no outreach to blind people. Things are going to change up there, or I'm going to know the reason why. But Larry, what is your dealing with AAA at LA County? I'm very disappointed in them right now.
So I kind of step back. And as I mentioned earlier, they are working to, while the AAA agencies exist, they do not have a fully functioning ADRC in Los Angeles County yet. They are working to bring that online. They're dealing with a lot of logistics. One of those, and just part of it, is some of what you talked about, but there's just a number of agencies involved in that process. So we are working with partners of that effort up there. Okay. We are not, I wouldn't say we're directly working with the various AAAs up there. We are working with, we continue to do outreach and promote to the independent living centers, who are the other key partner of that initiative. The AAA does, you know, the agencies up there do know that we are the OIB or AVL, as it is, provider in Los Angeles County. We have not had a lot of luck with them either. I'm hoping that as the ADRC initiative comes online, where there's, I mean, I hate to call it a forced partnership, but it's required, right? It's not something that's optional. Mm-hmm. With the independent living centers and other organizations in the county, I'm hoping that changes. But we're aware of it, we're aware of what's happening in Los Angeles County. And to the extent that we're the OIB provider in that county, we want to make sure that the AAA and other folks up there are making good referrals. But I agree with you. It's frustrating.
The thing is, we did not come threatening them. We want to be partners, and they don't want to be partners. There is no blind person on their Commission on Disabilities. There's a low vision guy. Right. And I said, well, who is he? We don't know. And I said, you're just shining me here, and I won't take that. I'm sorry.
Well, we do have two raised hands.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Who's next, Larry?
Yes. Judy.
Judy, go ahead, please.
Larry, when you were citing an example of where OIB and your other program complemented each other, unfortunately, it was when you were away with the fairies. So could you tell us that story again? Because we didn't get it.
I'm sorry. My internet faded away. So sorry. So it was a pretty brief example, but we've had several where we have situations where an individual is benefits from both of these programs. So as I kind of highlighted broadly, my observation is that someone who is aging and has vision loss, not only do they experience the issues connected to vision loss, the immediate issues, but they also experience the, if you can say, typical issues that someone who is aging might face in terms of, limited mobility. Maybe they've been ended up in a nursing facility and want to get back to the community. They may have need modifications to their home, any number of things. And so we were able to come together around that situation. Our Socorro's program supporting the ADRC staff that were helping and vice versa to address all of the issues that the person who came to us for assistance brought to the table. Right. So that was the concept here, that these programs complement each other extremely well because of the usual and typical issues that someone who's aging experiences. And then on top of that, the visual issues.
So, Larry, do you see collaboration working well? And what needs still to be done to enhance this kind of collaboration? And I'm also thinking of places like nursing homes, and that may be way beyond your pay grade, but you see what I'm saying? I'm just interested in your thoughts about the whole problem of collaboration.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that that gives me the most hope out of this initiative. To give you an example of how we function in Orange County, and it's, I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it's worked so well. And I don't know how the others, ADRCs function across the state, but we have six agencies that are funded directly through the ADRC funding that comes to Orange County. And then we have a number of others that are, we use this term called extended partners, who come alongside or aware of the ADRC. They don't get funding, but they are connected. They serve on our advisory committee, et cetera, et cetera. And so those folks, especially the funded agencies, for example, the staff who do the work and the supervisors meet monthly to talk about issues, to coordinate. It's just worked so well. And these agencies represent such a wide variety of disability and aging concerns. So that type of model is how it's supposed to work. I think that there's certainly room for improvement, not just in Orange County, but across the state. But if we can build these types of models out where there's that regular communication and conversation between the partners who are involved, that can only help. To speak specifically about the nursing homes and helping folks who are in those types of situations, just broadly, it's been very challenging over the last 2 years to do that because of all of the restrictions. However, our staff is now really proactively doing outreach, and I use the term infiltrating nursing facilities, because sometimes you can't get through the gatekeeper and we have to find other ways of getting that information to folks, but we do. But I think that the point of all of this is that there's increased opportunity here, and increased opportunity to make change, to improve lives of folks that we serve or are concerned about. But on the same, on the flip side of that, there's room for a lot of improvement. And that I want to encourage this organization, this chapter of CCB, to continue that outreach and that conversation with folks on the state level. You know, I don't know. I'll just tell you, I think that there's this myth that some folks say, well, the OIB funding program exists, so they're going to get services over there. And that's not the reality. As I started my comments with, there's limited funding. It hasn't expanded or grown for years, and the need is just increasing. So continue those conversations and, you know, outreach and discussions with folks on the state level and locally as part of your ADRC to demand that kind of collaboration.
Judy, great question. I think we have one more hand here, Larry.
Let's stay in Northern California and go to David Jackson.
David Jackson, okay.
This is a question for Mr. Wagner. I'm hearing, and this revolves around what you were just talking about, the budget, and it almost sounds as if these agencies are dealing with just a shoestring situation. And I'm amazed at just the way that you are able to hang on. We'll do what we can from our end. But I'm wondering, are there other ways that you are going to get funding? I mean, did I hear $4 million annually? I mean, that just doesn't seem to be enough money at all.
Okay, that's what he says.
So I think that funding is constantly an issue. We're in the position, or because we serve LA County through the OIB program, for example, we receive, if not the highest, pretty close to the highest amount of OIB funding, for example, from DOR. I suspect that the situation is even more difficult for some of our smaller OIB providers across the state. It's not enough funding for what we're supposed to be doing in LA County and Orange County, that's for sure. Not even close. And there's no quick fix for that. I'm kind of lost on, despite all the numbers, I know there's been active and concerted efforts to get the federal government to increase the allocation of funding for this program, and it hasn't really changed. And I don't know why that is. But that's where we're at.
Wow.
Let me see if Jeff Tom is around, if he would like to add anything here. We don't see him yet. Okay.
Jeff is here. He is here.
Okay.
Well, okay. Yeah, I am.
He's never shy. So.
Well, Jeff, I would add this, that.
Thank you.
That CCB and the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss in California is trying our best to increase funding. We have two bills that are both up for hearing this week, and I'll send out phone numbers the day before the hearings, because you don't get them till then, if people want to phone in. We have AB 2480 that would establish some pilots for the whole array of vision rehabilitation program services, which is essentially what OIB does. And we have AB 1999, which would establish pilot and funding for mental health services for people with vision loss. So we are working. The California Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired, all the facilities in the state, specialized service facilities, are, you know, working with us. So we are trying to, you know, create change in that arena. But, you know, we're a long ways behind the rest of the aging and disability community. So, you know, we have a lot of advocacy work to do. But, you know, this is as far as we have yet come. And I have some real hopes that we will achieve some modest success this year. It remains to be seen.
Frank Welty has his hand up.
Okay, absolutely. Mr. President.
Yeah, just to jump in on what Jeff was talking about. This is one of the main reasons that the CAAVL and AAVL exist, is that we know that there's a horrible lack of funding, and that's one of our highest priorities, is advocating nationally, statewide, and locally to get more funding. By the way, for those of you who are not in, don't have the privilege of being in LA or Orange County, I just posted a list of other OIB agencies in California. So wherever you are in California, there's going to be a message in your CAAVL list mailbox with a list of agencies you can check out.
Thank you. That's great.
I'm glad you did that, Frank. This is Socorro. Yes, you're right. There are 17 OIB providers in California. So if you're in our service area, there should definitely be one near you.
Well, I want to conclude, if I may, that my reader's yelling at me here. Oh, good. Larry's back and he'll get the final word. But I want to say that please know that you have a partner. I think I'm safe in saying in the California Council of the Blind and the Alliance, the California Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, and others of our affiliates, we are very much aware of the problems of funding. So this is why we're meeting. We're partners. If you hear something where we can help you, or we hear something, we'll be in touch. And the final word goes to our executive director. Larry, do you want to conclude this fine program?
Yeah, I'll just say thanks for the opportunity for Socorro and I to talk with you. And we too look forward to continued collaboration and working to address funding and other issues that would help to improve services for folks. So thanks for the opportunity and have a great evening.
Thank you so much. And now I turn the program over to our next facilitator, Mr. Jeff Tom, for his part of the program.
Thank you. That was a great presentation. I'm sure you all learned a lot like I did.
I did.
So if you're either in your golden years, like some of us are, or approaching them, you all are pretty well aware that life is going to throw you an awful lot of changes as we get into these years, so to speak. And tonight we have one of the great resources in this state is we have a regional office, I guess you'd call it, of the Helen Keller National Center on Deafblindness down in San Diego. And with us tonight is a placement specialist, Wendy Chouinard, to talk with us about preparing for retirement and beyond, a fascinating, if not daunting, topic. And so I'm going to turn it over without any more ado to Wendy. So Wendy, take it away.
Hi, thank you so much. This is Wendy Chouinard speaking. I'm really happy you pronounced my last name properly, because my last name gets butchered all the time. It's a French last name, French Canadian. So just a little bit about myself. I work in the California region. We have a regional office here. It was in San Diego. Now it's in Temecula. But we cover the entire state of California, where we provide various services, not only employment related, but technology related, as well as we provide services for our older adults as well, who have a combined vision and hearing loss. And I'll talk more about Helen Keller National Center as I progress through the discussion today. And the discussion, I want it to be a very lively discussion. If you have any questions, you know, there'll be a Q&A after. I did want to start off by saying as well that retirement, even though I'm in my 30s, it's something that we start thinking about when we begin our careers at 20, right? And there is a great quote that says, time has a way of showing us what really matters in life. So today's discussion is about keeping those things that matter in your life in the forefront and including them in your retirement and in your post-retirement life. Okay, so that's what we're going to start off with. And also think about, when you think of the word retirement, just sort of visualize what it means to you personally. And you might have, it might mean different things to you at different times in your life, but because we're all aging and we're thinking about the future, we often hear middle-aged and older adults speaking about their retirement, right, and concerns. It becomes like the topic of discussion oftentimes. And I want you to think of the word that comes to your mind when you hear this word retirement, and just hold on to that word. Maybe you can share it with me at the end of the discussion. But I'm going to give you a few words that when I surveyed our older adults, these are some of the words that came to their minds, and see if perhaps it's something that you also thought of. So some of the words were relaxation, fun, family time, worry, long-term care, appropriate, especially if you have a vision loss and blindness for like our consumers, sense of self, purpose, money, which is a big one. So in a way, it's a mix of emotions, right? It's almost like a turbulent sea. So today's discussion is more about finding six different ways or ideas that I will share with you to kind of be able to navigate this whole idea of retirement with calmness and also with a plan. So thought leaders in gerontology are encouraging us to think of a longer lifespan. So they're putting an emphasis on good. So there is a quote that says that when people ask people how long they expect to live, people tend to look to whatever ages their parents lived. And that's how long they think that they're going to live. So if your parents live to 70, that's your expectancy, or that's what you think of. But that's not a good measure anymore. So Laura Carstensen from the Stanford Center actually was the one that mentioned that. And she said that her frustration is that we've added, in essence, 30 years to our life expectancy, but we merely tacked those 30 years to the end. So what is retirement then? And that's a good question that you can ask yourself. You know, what truly does retirement mean? And I want to share not only a definition of retirement, but also, like I mentioned, six tips on how to approach retirement in a very holistic fashion. Okay. So just to give you a little bit of the background of who I am, I have a psychology and business background. And so the information that I'm presenting to you is coming from a very holistic approach, but also very practical as well. And I'm going to share some of the resources that we have. And I've put it in there within, you know, the conversation that we're going to have tonight. So let's get into the technical part of retirement. So retirement is technically defined as a time of life when you choose to permanently leave the workforce behind. It's that moment where you say, I'm done, no more 9 to 5, you know, I can live on my own terms. So the traditional retirement age, it used to be 65, right? And that's because that age started in 1930 with the Social Security Act of 1935. And it established this 65 age marker as the age of retirement in the US. So in 1935, the average monthly Social Security check, you won't believe it, but it was around $22. And that's if you lived long enough to qualify for it. So the average life expectancy at that time was 60 for men and around 64 for women, right? So, but as we all know, life has definitely changed, and we have a much longer lifespan thanks to advancements, not only in the medical fields, but also in the way that we just, you know, think of life in general. We tend to be more positive, and that also helps us. So now, even though our life expectancy has changed, I've noticed that most individuals still keep that number 65 in their mind as the time of a big transition, right? So when you start thinking of retirement, or if you're maybe you still have a few years to go, or if you're kind of approaching that time, start to maybe visit websites like the Social Security Administration. And it has a very accessible life expectancy calculator. I mean, you might know about that already, but using that, it will tell you the average number of additional years a person with your date of birth and your gender can expect to live. And using that calculator, I'm going to use the 65-year-old woman, born January 1st, 1955. And if you crunch the numbers, her life expectancy would be of 86.6. And if she makes it to 70, then her life expectancy increases to 87.6. And a man of the same age has an average life of 84.1. Okay, so we're encouraged now to think of 90, of 100 years life now, and make plans to take advantage of those extra 30 years throughout our lives, and maybe pick up a new sport at 40, or go back to school at 50, start a new career at 60, find what your passion is at 60, you know, it's okay. And so if we think about it this way, and using the 6 tips that I'm going to share with you today, we're going to come up with we're going to think of retirement in a different light, and also be a bit more prepared as well. So let's start with number 1. We have to define your retirement. So you probably already formulated your vision board. You know, how do you like to spend your retirement? And it could have been just like fleeting thoughts that you thought perhaps a day that you were in the office or that you were at work, and that idea, you were having a bad day and that idea of retirement popped into your head. But according to the AARP, it's best to write down, if you can, or have a way of putting it down, your objectives, you know, and listing the more important goals first. So whatever is of value to you, put it first on your list, and then focus on ideas and be as specific as you can be. For example, if you want to travel more, instead of putting just travel, why don't you put like trips to the lake or trip to Paris? You know, just be very specific in your goals. And instead of saying something like staying involved in my community, why don't you put down, you know, volunteer with my grandkids or volunteer at a location one day a week? You know, so being very specific will help us to define our retirement. And then try to limit also your list to no more than 5 goals. Okay. We don't want to overwhelm ourselves either. And we have to be very practical as well. And perhaps rule out, you know, you should rule out unnecessary expenses as well, because we have to make sure that all of our financial needs are met as well. So as you brainstorm, kind of like keep that in mind. And the more descriptive you are, the more tangible your retirement will be, right? And it'll help you to keep a focused view of your retirement. But hey, if your goals are still vague or just general, you know, that's okay too, because you can simply start just by envisioning or outlining how you envision enjoying your retirement. It is a time to enjoy yourself, and maybe put it down, jot it down that you're going to revisit the brainstorm for your retirement at a later time. So it just keep that in mind. To define your retirement means to map out your goals for retirement and what you would like to prioritize during your retirement. So number 2, we're going to talk about a big one, and that's money matters. I think that money is the one thing that we gives us the most fear when we think about our retirement. And when we think of Social Security income, it was intended to be a three-legged stool, right? So you would have your pension, public or your 401k, and then you had personal savings or, you know, large assets such as your home, perhaps. And if you haven't elected to take your Social Security yet, you should wait as long as you can, because the longer you wait to start collecting Social Security, maybe up to the age of 70, the larger your monthly check will be, correct? So if possible, why not wait until you reach your full retirement age so that you can earn your full amount each month? And you can also use the Social Security benefits calculator to sort of estimate how much you're going to get. So, and I can't stress how important this decision is, because it is one and it's done. So if you're able to work more in order to delay an early Social Security benefits decision, it's a very important consideration to make, right? And that doesn't matter if you're married, you're single, widowed, or divorced. It usually pays to wait to claim. And again, very few older adults these days are fully financially prepared for that 30-year retirement. And there's various retirement tools that you can use. And, you know, I can also provide those at a later time to you if you need them. But one of them is also on the ARP, and it's linked in the notes as well. I think they probably shared that with you all. But there's a lot of tools that we can look into, and also start thinking about your budget forecasting, right? And that needs to include things like how much money is really coming into you, how much will it cost to reach your goals that you've identified, if you have, and then how much debt do you have too? So those are three things to consider. So maybe perhaps start tracking your income and your expenses for a couple of months, and then figure out how much money you'll need in retirement, right, to support your chosen lifestyle. And you'll definitely need to do a financial checkup on your investments as well, and diversify your money if possible, investing in things that you perhaps understand, and going with those investments won't really cost you a ton in fees, right? So if you're carrying debt, make sure that your budget also includes that payments where you can knock off your debt. So if you need any additional help on your budgeting, there is a lot of even such things like considering a reverse mortgage, connecting with the consumer credit counseling agencies such as credit.org. It's a wise thing to do if possible, okay? So let me move away from money. And now we're going to go into tip number three, which is, you know, seriously consider the glide path to retirement. I'm going to talk a little bit about what that is. So perhaps a phase of like 65 plus doesn't need to be so hard and fast, right? After all, as like I keep mentioning, that many people are living longer lives, you know, every year. So unless you are financially set for life, you will have to either stretch limited money and give up some of those retirement dreams, or perhaps stay in the workforce in some sort of capacity. You know, I know my father, he's retired, but he still works a day a week. He just enjoys that. And again, that could also help you pay for some of your dreams. That helps him to pay for some of his trips. So earning some income after you retire means that A, you can continue to save, and also avoid cracking open your nest egg for smaller expenses that you might have. So I'm going to tell you a little story that I just read about. It's America's oldest park ranger. Her name is Betty Reed. And she decided to retire from her job at a young age of 100. So she started with the Park Service at the age of 85 and retired at 100. So once again, many of us are going to have that, you know, perhaps that first, that second, that third, that fourth, and maybe the fifth act in our lives, right? So studies have shown that sometimes retirement is linked to substantially higher rates of depression and physical illness. And that's something that we do have to also think about. And there's a strong case sometimes for staying in the workforce past 65 years of age. There's another, the Stanford Center on Longevity has created what they call the new map of life. So it lays out in a really beautiful way options for working less rather than full time or not working at all. So if you consider what's called the glide path into retirement, that involves decreasing your hours gradually over a period of years. So perhaps looking into educational opportunities that would, you know, allow you to learn new skills or redirect your career path, right? or try what they call a quote-unquote returnship, a twist on an internship that incentivizes retirees to return to the workplace or to share expertise and, you know, alleviate perhaps labor shortages that we have right now at the moment that COVID caused as well. And maybe that includes partnering up with agencies like the Department on Rehabilitation for training and equipment, as well as we, the Helen Keller National Center, operate a full program here in California that mirrors our program in New York, where our headquarters are located. And we support older adults with employability if they're interested. So if you do have a combined vision and hearing loss, and you need assistance, perhaps to even just remain successful at your workplace or to keep up with the technology programs that are changing constantly, you know, you may benefit from specialized training from our community service program that we have here. It is a team of seven individuals, and we offer services such as independent living training. We also have assistive technology training, and of course, employment training, communication training, as well as mobility, orientation and mobility as if you need it. And we provide advocacy as well, okay? So another program too that I kind of wanted to mention is the Senior Community Service Employment Program as well. It is a community service and work-based training program for older adults. And actually, we've had a few who have benefited from this program. And it's authorized by the Older Americans Act. And the program provides training for low-income unemployed seniors. So participants also have access to employment assistance through American Job Centers, Senior Community Service Employment Program in the U.S. Department of Labor. So the website is dol.gov. Of course, but I feel like I'm talking too fast. but the next tip I wanted to share with you is a little bit more, more positive, more my type of topic, which is health and wellness. And again, I cannot stress the importance of exercise. And I'm going to repeat it again for emphasis: exercise, and once more, exercise now and forever. Because older adults, especially with the low vision and who are blind, they enjoy many health and wellness activities, martial arts, swimming, yoga has become a trend now, and Pilates. You have so many ways of maintaining your stamina, of exercising. So if you have been physically active, keep it up. You know, adapt as you need to, right? As we get older, our body changes, of course. So adapt, modify, but don't stop. And if you're struggling with exercise, make an appointment with your primary care physician for advice, recommendations, including perhaps a referral to physical therapy if you feel you need it as well. But there's a lot of, water aerobics. There's a lot of activities that you can engage in. Walking, but all this will help you to maintain your stamina and your mental and your physical well-being. The National Institute on Aging has a landing page, and it's called Exercise and Physical Activity. And it's on there. And the National Braille Press offers a publication called Fitness After 50. Okay, so take use of these resources as well, because the Fitness After 50 explains that you don't need to join a gym or buy expensive equipment. You know, you don't need to buy that expensive machine, but everything you need to begin your own exercise program is right inside this book. So the Fitness Over 50, I'll tell you what it includes. It includes exercise tips, ways to get and stay motivated, because oftentimes we start and then we stop, endurance, flexibility, strength, and balance exercises, nutrition. And as we get older, nutrition and healthy eating tips are very important. And also your local area agency on aging also offers health and wellness classes, like chronic disease management, different groups on that. And you can find them online. And also I have the number. I can always, I hope that it can be shared later on, but it's, I would just mention it now, it's 800-510-2020, but I'm sure it'll be shared with you later on too. And that's from anywhere in California. Okay, so putting an emphasis on exercise. And number five, and we're almost done with the six tips, but number five is your social network. It's part of your health and it's part of your wellness. So midlife for many, and I can attest to that right now, that you're so busy with raising children. And it just tends to be the most productive years of work. So as a result of being busy, just busy with life, close friendships sometimes fall by the wayside, right? So make an effort now to put friendship high on your list. You know, the beginning quote that we talked about, things that you cherish, things that you value. Our social relationships are directly linked to your health. And loneliness represents a really significant public health risk. And some studies say that loneliness is the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Okay, so maintaining a social life doesn't mean that you have to be at every party, every social, every event that you hear about. It doesn't mean that. But people that have 3 to 5 close friends have been reported to have the highest levels of life satisfaction. You know, doesn't it feel good when you had a bad day just to talk to a friend who understands? And at the end of that conversation, you feel so much better, don't you? Maybe the problem wasn't resolved, but just by dialogue, you feel better. So virtual groups too, during COVID, we found that virtual groups can be also a great way to socialize and to find support. So there is another resource that I'm gonna give you, it's covia.org. And in there, it's a free virtual senior center that even has the Living with Vision Loss group in their course catalogs. And Well Connected, it's called, is proud to have an accessibility council, and about 30% of older adults who attend are blind or live with low vision, okay? And finally, number six, we gotta prepare for the unexpected. Few of us, you know, they head into retirement expecting the worst. I know for me, it is a daunting thought, but sometimes it happens where you really have to prepare for the unexpected now, and you won't get caught off guard later. So taking time to consider how do you pay for this and respond to everything from maybe minor issues like a roof leak to serious ones like a grave illness will help you weather those storms when they do unfortunately come. So do make sure that you discuss these big issues with your family or your closest ones to you, and take stock of your protection as well. You know, do you have enough homeowners insurance to cover a major calamity, or is your health insurance or long-term care insurance adequate? So now is the time to also start putting money aside for emergencies like that. So preparing now means you won't pay later. So those are my six tips that I have to share. You know, I wanted to keep this very positive and just to share with you that what is life like beyond retirement? Don't think of retirement as the end of something, but as either a continuum of your beautiful life or a chance to reborn, to shape your life again, right? So before the Q&A, I just kind of wanted to share just a little bit more about Helen Keller National Center. I mentioned the California group that we have here, our office in Temecula, but I also wanted to share that we have 13 regional offices all throughout the U.S. So we do provide national services. So if you do know somebody with a combined vision and hearing loss that perhaps lives in Iowa, we have a regional office there. You know, we have every state in the U.S. is covered by HKNC, as well as the some of our territories like Guam, even Hawaii as well, right? So HKNC, as we like to call it, because Helen International Center tends to be really long. So it's positioned to provide information, referral, and support to people who, again, like I mentioned, have the combined vision and hearing loss. And should you need support now or perhaps in the future, you might know somebody who does. We also host a Confident Living program for older adults. And it's a 5-day program in New York that focuses on assistive technology, learning strategies to help you care for your home, prepare for emergencies, travel safely, enjoy leisures, activities, and more, and also interact with others that understand what you're going through. And just getting that peer support can mean a lot. And also survival strategies. So if you're unable to go to New York, we can also provide those services here in California as well in the comfort of your home or in a location designated. So we also have partner up with the I Can Connect program and other aging services programs. So if we can't give you the answer, we know who can. So our region of reps are positioned in such a way that they become the first point of contact for everyone. And they provide the information about the education and employment and different types of services that are not only available to you locally, nationally, but also virtually. And so with that being said, I hope that the discussion today on preparing for retirement and beyond has gotten your mind thinking. And remember, I asked you about that word that came to your mind when you thought about retirement. Maybe during the Q&A, you can share that. And I hope that you've enjoyed the presentation. I've enjoyed being here. So now I will pass it on to Q&A.
Great. So thank you. Before we open it up to Q&A, Larry, I just want to take 30 seconds to mention that Wendy has sent me a Word document that contains the essentials of the discussion that she just laid out. Very thought-provoking and fascinating. And so I will certainly send that out to the CAA via list. So thank you, Wendy, for providing that. And with that, Larry, do we have anybody who would like to ask a question or talk about retirement?
I do see Connie's hand is raised.
Okay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. So I am at the beyond stage. I retired early at 62 because everything was getting very extremely technology based. It was right when COVID hit. We all had to learn Zoom and all that. And I am a retired teacher, and teachers do not pay into Social Security, the state teachers retirement system. So what would you suggest for someone like me? Teachers don't make a great salary to begin with, and then we don't pay into Social Security. So what would you suggest for someone like me who's a retired teacher?
So I would suggest for you, you know, the presentation today was thinking about that beyond, Connie. You know, being a teacher, and this is, of course, if this is the path that you want to take. I have worked with several individuals who've retired from their first career and have gone on to perhaps seeking employment in other areas, maybe 1 day or 2 day a week type of employment situation to kind of balance out their, you know, their little nest egg. So that's an option, but I'm going to give you on the Word document, there is 4 different links. Okay. And I want you to check out the 10 steps to get ready for retirement. It's okay. On there. And I want you to go to that link and check it out. Whenever you get the Word document, okay. So Look it up. And also, there's another one on senior benefits, find help for paying for everyday needs as well, to kind of supplement. Okay, so those are the two links that I want you to take a good look at.
Okay. Okay.
And just kind of, it really will kind of give you a good plan for you to set up. Because I do know that I've worked with, you know, my family is, most of them come from the educational background, they're teachers, mm-hmm. principals. So I understand that it works a little different. So, but do check those two out, okay, and see what works for you. And if you have any questions as well, they can share my email and I'd be more than happy as well to have a talk one-to-one with you, Connie, if you'd like
that. Yeah? Okay, great. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Connie. Thank you.
Bob Acosta has his hand up.
Okay, let me comment for Wendy. Outstanding presentation. Thank you so much. Let me comment about teachers. I taught 37 years in the public schools of California, retired at 62. Because I wanted to travel and have a great time, and I have. My birthday's tomorrow. I'll be 83, so I'm cheating the school district beautifully. And still living longer, I'm sure they would hope I'd get off and leave, and they wouldn't have to pay. My district, for example, pays all of our medical, period. That's money in the bank, you know, because you go to the doctor more and more as you go. But what I want to jump to is loneliness. It's easy to have a lot of friends when you're in the California Council of the Blind, chapter meetings, friendships, parties. Mm-hmm. So I know Orange County has a Super Bowl party. Those were over. They ended with a crash. It's great to have Zoom. It really is. But it's not the answer of hugging your friend as a blind person. Shaking hands doesn't do any good. You hug each other. Hello. What can I do for you? How can I help you? So how do we deal? Talk a little more. And I get along with my wife. We're going to be married 52 years. So, you know, what can I say? I tell her I suffer and everything. I don't. I'm really lucky. But we get along, fortunately. But how do you deal with loneliness? It's a killer with COVID.
Thank you, Robert, for that. Or Bob. It really is, you know. And going back to my background, which is psychology, I will say that loneliness, it trickles into every part of your life. You know, if you're lonely, you don't feel good. You're not motivated to do anything. And with loneliness, you know, like you mentioned, several Zoom groups, and you can have this and you can have that. So you can be with a group of 10 people, but the intimacy is not there. So you might be in a group, but feel lonely, right? And so that's why I mentioned the importance of having just those occasions where you have a one-to-one with your friend, making time to check in with that small group of friends that really hold you, that keep you sane, basically. You know, it doesn't have to be a big group. These functions are really wonderful. But the one problem with Zoom is, and maybe you've experienced that too, that I've had several virtual parties, but you sort of, you don't know who's speaking and who, what's going on. And you just end up sometimes coming out of that a little bit more frustrated than when you went in. And so making that time with your friends who you've known, like they call them your ride or die friends, having one-to-one conversations with them is really going to get rid of that loneliness. And another idea too is, you know, I've felt lonely in the past, even if I'm surrounded by people, but having a pet, even simple things like that, having a pet, I have two guinea pigs and they keep me sane. And those help to combat also feelings of loneliness. So again, just having that close friend that you can talk to. And whenever you get that feeling of loneliness, it's sort of the time where your body is saying SOS. So reach out to a friend that you can trust and talk to them at that moment and be very transparent. There's nothing wrong with opening up yourself and saying, you know, I called you, I was feeling a little lonely, wanted to just talk to you. It could be a relative or it could be a friend, but maybe having that support system where you call that friend whenever you feel that will help to battle the loneliness. Because if you don't tackle loneliness, it'll empower you. It'll take over you. And we don't want that, because then other other feelings might start to come up and bubble forth. So having a good friend to talk to, being in when I mean intimate or intimacy, I mean really expressing yourself, being vulnerable with that individual. So make sure you all have that, because loneliness, if you don't get rid of it quickly, it likes to stay in you. You know, it's like that bad friend you can't get rid of. it'll stay in your body. So
just in conclusion, my friends who do know me, I'm not a pessimist. Usually I really, my battery gets charged. I'm delighted. I love retirement because I'm busier than I ever was in my whole life, helping to forward the cause of blind people and so forth. But the problem is, when I was a young man, I'd say, the old guard, gee, who are those old guys? What are they? Now I'm the old guard, but with COVID, the old guard is dying off. Friends that I counted on have left us. So yeah. It's a struggle, but I appreciate your words and they've helped me immeasurably. And thank you.
Thank you. And then also just another point I wanted to add too is, you know, reach out to help locations that perhaps need a volunteer. Giving of our time is one of the best ways to avoid those feeling of loneliness too, because when you're giving to others, you're getting back more. So volunteering your skills, your talents, right.
I'm okay there. 63 years helping the blind is a pretty good volunteer effort, I think.
Definitely.
Nobody pays me. My salary is great for helping the blind. It's zero.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, I'll be quiet. There's probably other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Anyone else? With?
Yes, the next question is from David Jackson.
Okay, David.
Zoom meeting.
Good evening. I wanted to say that the one thing that has driven me away, perhaps, from retirement is I wanted to stay away from depression. So what I decided to do was to invest in going back to school and to reinvent myself as a library technician. And I'm in the process now. I'm getting really close to the end of the road. The one thing that I have to say, though, is that I have encountered loneliness in being a student constantly online. And what I'm hearing from folks is, even though you are in a situation where you're with people online, you still feel kind of lonely. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out how to work that as well. But I wanted to say that I decided to do what I'm doing because I just wanted to keep pushing forward and just not, and to look for maybe a better end. And so that's what I have to say. Thanks.
So, David, before Wendy answers that question, I just want to remind you, we have a Giants game to go to.
Yes, I know. We have to figure which one to go to.
That's right.
And you only get lonely if they lose, so make sure they win.
That we can discount that comment.
They lost to the Mets. Yes. Doubleheader. They lost to the Mets.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Go ahead.
David, I appreciate that and congratulations on, again, you know, starting. You're a great example of what I talked about, how you can again redefine your life or just metamorphosize as well as you get older, and taking in finding your passion and doing that. So I want to commend you for that. And the feeling of loneliness, it's definitely, like I said, a big one. And I did share some of those tips, you know, volunteer.
Yeah, yes.
But another good one also is there's so many great podcasts right now, David. And podcasts, I find that when I've had feelings of loneliness too, I listen to a really uplifting, I don't know if I should share mine, but there's some great podcasts out there, you know, and just kind of listening to those also helps to kind of deal with feelings of loneliness in a way. So that's another thing that has become very popular within the last 3 years, and it's such a great resource. So find a good podcast for you. I listen to Lewis Howes almost daily. You know, that's been my...
Oh, thank you.
You know, I'll look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But thank you, David.
You're very welcome. Thank you. It's been a great program. Thank you.
All right. Frank Welty is next.
Frank.
Yes. Going over to the issue of finance is something that I want to share. And for those of you who haven't heard of it, I hope everybody does, is that there is a wonderful account that's relatively new called an ABLE account. And for those of us who are on limited income, because perhaps we're receiving supplemental security income or SSDI or some of these other programs where they limit how much assets you can have. If you set up an ABLE account, you can put up to $15,000 a year into that account and get it as high as $100,000. And none of that money counts against your resource limit. And other people can contribute to that account. So it doesn't just have to be money that you're coming up with. If you want to get more information, the website is calable.ca.gov. And I think it's free to set up the account. So as long as you are disabled before the age of 26, then you're eligible for one of these things. So definitely, if you're looking for a way to get out of that financial straitjacket we sometimes find ourselves in, check that out.
Thank you so much, Frank, for that resource. I appreciate that. You know, money really, like that was number two, money matters. And being able to have a good plan or prepare in advance, or even if you are close or you are retired, you know, it's always something that we keep in the forefront, and it's always a worry, right, for everyone, for most individuals. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
Okay.
I am the last person so far with his hand raised.
Okay.
And as I lower Frank's, I wanted to go back to something you said, Wendy, earlier about retirement, because I really didn't know anything about it. And I worked for Marriott for 21 years. I tested software for those who use JAWS and made sure that they could make reservations. And that all came to a screeching halt, of course, when COVID hit, because the job changed and I was supposed to retire this year in August. And I wound up retiring in 2020 in 2021. August. So I retired 10 months earlier because the job had changed. So I had to learn quickly about retirement. And I learned also that friends of mine, in many cases, said to me, oh my God, I don't know what to do about when I retire. I know nothing about it. And I had to learn fast. And I would say to you, a lot of our friends here are retired, but some may not be, and some may have relatives and friends who are not. And I would say, learn early. I mean, start looking when you're in your 30s and 40s about it, because it's something that's eventually going to happen to you. Make sure you know what you're doing and how to do it. And Wendy's given some great tips. And I was in a very fortunate situation. I did well with Marriott, made money, saved it. And so when I retired, I didn't need another job. I was fine. I've got somebody helping me take care of it. And so I'm in a pretty good position. So the last thing I wanted to do was really do anything except retire. I loved it, but I love people. I've been working since for 18 or 19, my wife passed away. I got busy because I had to. I kept going and I've never stopped. And so I wasn't planning on working again, but ACB, I volunteer for them, do radio stuff, lots of it. And they offered a job to a lot of us and I won it. And so now I'm working again part-time. And I don't mind doing that because it's a passion. So I wouldn't have done it if it weren't a passion. But retirement is nothing to be afraid of if you have a chance to actually look at it, analyze it, take some of these tools that Wendy has given you, go up to Social Security, look at everything they've got. They got a ton of stuff on that website. And it's something that can be done easily, but not if you're like 2 months away. This is something that needs to be done even a year or two out, so that you know exactly what you're doing. But I love this. I love this segment of the CEAABL meeting. It's terrific, and thanks for being with us.
This is Wendy. Thank you for that. And, you know, I'm really happy that you were able to plan your retirement well in that sense. And, you know, even you're beyond, you're doing just what I wanted to share with everyone today. It's that beyond too that really matters. And having not only being financially secure, but being emotionally and physically prepared, you know, the importance, I just kind of want to emphasize the importance of having a good physical routine. It all ties in together, right? If your body feels good, your mind feels good. If your mind feels good, you can go and exercise and do things like that. So it's all interconnected. So the importance of, you know, for those that are at the beyond period, don't think of it as I'm done, I can just rest, or you know, you volunteer, but make sure that you take care of your physical well-being. And with that, I don't want to sound too much like I'm here to tell you what to do, but I really want to stress that. And again, if you know of anyone who needs our services, you know, please do refer them to us. There's so many individuals with a combined of, you know, the vision and hearing loss who are in need of our services. And we're here as a resource to support them in any way. So I'm really honored that I was invited to come today to speak to such a great group of individuals. So thank you so much for...
Well, Wendy, we are extremely gratified to have had you today, and your presentation has really been awesome and very thought-provoking. So thank you so much for attending our event this evening, and we hope to talk with you again. Larry, I guess I should ask if there's any more hands. I don't want to
preclude anything. No, there are not. No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Wendy. And I guess I'll turn it back to Frank.
I was going to ask Wendy if she could give a phone number for the Helen Keller Center in Temecula, if she's still there.
Yes, this is Wendy. I will give you.
Or is it on the Word document?
You know, I don't think I put it on the Word document.
I don't think so. So go ahead and give it.
Okay, it's 516-695-5959, and it is a New York number, but it's locally. It's just the way the system works, and they gave us a New York number.
Sounds like it's from Long Island.
Exactly. Yes, so again, it's 516-695-5959.
Thank you.
All right, thanks again, Wendy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you again. This is Wendy. Thank you very much, and have a great night, everyone.
Yep. Same to you.
Frank, back to you.
Yes, and I want to give a big thanks to our program committee for bringing us such a wonderful lineup of speakers tonight. They were excellent, especially to Bob and Jeff for lining up those speakers and being our MCs for this portion of our program. It was great, time well spent. I learned a lot. We're a few minutes early, so I'm going to suggest that we start our business session at 7:55. So we have a few minutes to take a quickie break because we've been sitting for a couple hours. So I will try to start the meeting promptly at 7:55, and I'm going to mute for a few minutes and then be back.